The main topic of this chapter 10 is similar to the earlier chapters 7, 9, 10 and the coming chapters 11 and 12. The central theme of all these middle six chapters of the Gita is basically Ishvara Swarupa, meaning the nature of God. This is what Krishna is going to describe in these middle six chapters. What is the nature of God? So, in this chapter also, chapter 10, verses 1, 2 and 3, he talked about the same topic, Ishvara Swarupa. And then in verses 4 onwards, he spoke about the very same topic by telling us that all the very nature of God which manifests in this creation is also internal as well as external. So in verses 4 and 5, which we went through last week, the internal emotions that we feel at the mental level, that also are all but a manifestation of that same Ishvara. So now, in the previous chapters, we see that the Bhagavad Gita will take us to an understanding of Lord in three different stages. The first stage, the scriptures present to us Lord as the intelligent cause of the creation, Nimitta Karanam, which we discussed last week. So the very first stage, first level for us to understand is Lord is the intelligent cause of the creation. And thus, this Lord is represented to us in the temples when we go and pray. He has many heads, many hands, meaning he is the most intelligent person who is able to create this entire creation, diverse creation. So this is how Lord is symbolized to us, that this Lord has a place of residence, he stays in Vaikuntha, he stays in Kailasha, and he is an intelligent being. Then when we are ready to progress to the next stage, then the scriptures tell us that Lord is not only the intelligent cause of this creation, Nimitta Karanam, but he is also the material cause of this creation, Upadana Karanam. Thus, in this creation, Lord is both the intelligent and the material cause of creation. Both he is. Because we understand this, that for anything to be created, the creator must take some material from outside. If a carpenter wants to create a wooden table, he has to take wood from outside. If a goldsmith wants to create golden ornaments, he has to take gold from outside. But in the beginning, only Lord existed. So, where was the material? God himself became the material also. Therefore, God is both the intelligent and the material cause of the creation. And then when we are ready to accept the second stage, then we go to the third stage, which is that since this Lord is infinite, Lord is beyond time and space, so there is no question of Lord becoming the universe. Instead, we say, because Lord He is above all limitations of space and time. So there is no question of Lord becoming the universe, because why? Lord is changeless. He is beyond change. So how can he become the universe? Because the universe goes through changes. So we don't say therefore that Lord becomes the universe. We say he appears as the universe. Now, how are we to understand this? Shankaracharya helps us to understand this by giving us the example of the rope and the snake. The snake is there in reality, but in the darkness, we don't see the snake. I'm sorry, the rope is there in reality. In the darkness, we don't see the rope. But if we have knowledge that there are snakes in this area, if we have some fear about snakes, in the darkness, the very rope appears as a snake. Therefore, what does this darkness signify now? our ignorance, because we don't have knowledge of this God who is beyond beyond manifestation. Because we don't have knowledge, therefore we are unable to, we see the world, but we are unable to see God who is also already in the world. So God does not transform into the world, He appears as the world. And in the Purusha Suktam, which is a very famous hymn from the Rig Veda, Purusha means the Lord Himself. Suktam is verses which glorify this cosmic Lord. It is said in the Purusha Suktam, Ajaya Mano Bahuda Vijyate. Ajaya Mano means Lord is unborn. Ajaya Mano, He is unborn. But He Vijayate, He appears. In inverted commas, He appears Bahuda in many ways. The Lord does not undergo any transformation, He appears in many ways. Just like the allegory of the rope and the snake. So another way to understand this is, if we are the waker, when we go to sleep, we create a dream world. Is the dream world real? What happens to the dream world when we wake up? It disappears. But yet we project the dream world. So this is exactly the relationship of the Lord with the world. He projects a world. That's why the world is called Maya, an illusion. And it is only because of our ignorance that we don't understand all this. So what is level one? Level one is God creates the universe. That is the first level to understand. What is level two? God becomes the world. Okay, because God is the intelligent and material cause. So level two is God becomes the world. Level three is what? God appears as the world. Right? So of these three levels now, in this chapter, Krishna is discussing level two. That is, God becomes the world. And this whole world, Krishna has said in chapter 2, the whole creation is divided into two. One is the internal universe of our thoughts and emotions. Another is the external world of objects. Both combined together is the Lord Himself. So in verses 4 and 5, we already discussed all the internal emotions that are the manifestation of the Lord in us. Now let us look at the external world. And Lord talks about the external world in verse 6 by starting with the very beginning of creation. How did creation come about? So here now He tells us that the external world, the very first thing that Lord created was, here if you look at the second line of verse 6, the word Chatvaro. Chatvaro means the ancient four. The ancient four, they were the very first thing. Now, actually this is how creation started. From the navel of Vishnu came Brahmaji, right? Then Brahmaji was given the responsibility to carry out the whole creation. So what is the very first thing that Brahmaji created? He created these ancient four people. Chatvaro. Therefore, from Lord Vishnu's navel came Brahma. Brahma created the four ancient Chatvaro. And who are these ancient Purve? Purve, the word Purve means ancient. Purve Chatvaro. Chatvaro means four. So who are these ancient four? They are referred to commonly as the Kumaras. You would have heard the name Sanaka, right? Sanatana, Sanandana and Sanat Kumara. Now these four Kumaras were then entrusted by Lord Brahma to go and create. He gave them the order. Now you go forth and create. That means want to see more and more creation. So they were supposed to get married, create children, etc. and start the whole human race. But what did these four Kumaras do? They went against Lord Brahma's wishes. They refused to get married, they refused to have children. So nowadays, parents complain they have disobedient children, Lord Brahma also had to deal with disobedient children. It already started way back there. So the four Kumaras did not want to procreate, they wanted to remain as sannyasis. They preferred to remain there because they were engrossed in the love for God. They were not interested in all this worldly propagation. So what is the next thing that Lord Brahma did? He had no choice but to create here in the verse 6, Maharshaya Sapta. Sapta means seven Maharishis. Then he created seven Maharishis. So who are the seven Maharishis? Now different texts give different names, but from generally most of the texts mention these seven names. That is Bhrigu. You would have heard of these names, some of these names: Bhrigu Maharaj, Marichi, Atri. You can go on the internet and find these names very easily. Atri, Pulasya, Pullaha, Kratur, and Vashishta. Sage Vashishta also is very popular. Many of you have heard many stories about him. So now Brahmaji has created the seven rishis, and earlier he created the four Kumaras. So that's why there are two lines of what we call parampara, or what is the translation for parampara?
Lineage.
Okay, so there are two lineages now. From the four Kumaras, we have the lineage of the sannyasis who don't want to get married, who remain unmarried, and that is one lineage, that is sannyasi parampara. So they were knowledgeable people, the Kumaras, but they refused to get married and they engrossed themselves all in the time with Lord. Thoughts of Lord, stories of Lord, etc. So there is the sannyasi parampara. From the seven Maharishis, they all got married. They had a wife, they had children, they set up a household. So this is known as the, what we call the, what is that name for householders? Grihas Parampara. So then came the Grihas Parampara. So that's why we have two lineages here. Those who choose not to get married but dedicate their lives to God, Sannyasi Parampara, which started from the four Kumaras, and the Grihas Parampara, which started from the seven Maharishis, who chose to also be engrossed with the Lord, but they decided to follow Brahmaji's order, get married, have children, etc. And then what happened? Then he says, after that, what did Lord Brahma create? Look at the second line. Tatha Manavas. Manavas. Manavas are the 14 Manus. Again, you can go into the internet, keen 14 Manavas. Now, what is the duty of each Manava? Each Manava presides over one Manvantram. So, there are Manvantrams, and each Manava presides over each one mantra. So, he is in charge of the entire creation for that particular period of time. Then he hands over his duties to another Manava. Now, just to give you an idea, one Manvantram consists of 71 Chaturu Yugas. Okay? It's very mind-boggling. One Yuga is how many million years? One Yuga. Four million 320 thousand years, right? That is one Yuga. Okay? That four Yugas add up to the one Maha Yuga. That is 4.32 million years. Chatur Yuga means what?
Four Yugas of that is
4.32 million years is the four Yugas. So when we say 71, you take 4.3 million multiplied by 71. How much do you get? Roughly, you get about, let's say, 300 million years. That is only one Manvantara. Okay? And how many Manvantras are there? There are 40 Manus, but each Manu presides over 300 million years. And we are currently in presiding by the what is called the seventh Manu Muni. That means 300, 300, 300, 300, 300, we are now at the seventh Manu. That means 2 billion years, is it? 2 billion years have already passed. So we are now in the seventh Manu, and then this Manu has got a name, is called Vaivasvata Manu. V-A-I-V-A-S-V-A-T-A. Vaivasvata Manu. And then again, out of this what we call Chatur Yugas, 71 Chatur Yugas, we have only passed only 28. So that's still another 43 more to go. We're still a long way just to finish with this. So the idea is that this creation is very mind-boggling. In fact, many people like to question, you know, why did God create the world, what did He create, how He created. So there's a story told about a sage. He also was sitting down in front of the ocean, and he was contemplating all this, you know, why did God create the world, how did He create, when did the world start. He was contemplating. So God decided to teach him in a different way. He sent a little young boy to come in front of the sage, and the little boy was carrying a bucket, and the bucket had many holes in it. So this boy went to the ocean, filled up the water from the ocean, and tossed the water onto the bank of the ocean. And he did this 2 times, 10, 20 times, 30 times, 40 times, every time scooping a little water from the bucket and throwing it to the ocean bank. So the sage was watching this fellow. Before that, he was contemplating on all the creation of the universe, how did it come about, etc. And he called the boy. He said, what are you trying to do? You have a hole with a bucket with holes in it, and you are splashing water from here to there. The boy said, I am trying to empty the whole ocean. So the sage said, something, are you mad or something wrong with you? Do you know how infinite is the ocean? How wide is the ocean? And you with this little bucket, that also with holes in it, are trying to empty this whole ocean? And the boy said, aren't you also the same like me? You are trying with your finite mind to contemplate on the infinite creation. How can you also try to understand how even God created this creation? So instead of asking ourselves, why did God create the world? How did He create the world? How did all this come about? What should we be asking? What should we be asking? How do I get out of this cycle of birth and death, isn't it? That is our main question. We want to know, how do I get out of this cycle of birth and death? To know why He created, how He created, is really mind-boggling. So basically what here is trying to tell you is the creation is going back millions and billions and billions of years. Up to now, nobody has even understood when the creation started, when and how it came about. All have theories only. So here he says, after that was created the 14 Manus. Now, how did all these things were created? The 4 Kumaras, the 7 Rishis, the 14 Manus. How were all these created? In the third line you see, Manasa Jataha. Jataha means they were born. How? From the Manas, from the mind of Lord Brahma. So from the mind of Lord Brahma, he created all this from his mind. So they are not born from any womb, but by the very will or the projection of Brahma, this whole world has come about. And therefore their births are all very pure. Now, what about all this creation? Krishna says that Madbhava, that is in the third line, Madbhava. Madbhava means their origin is pure. Because they have been created by the very mind of Brahma, their origin is very pure. And they are the most closest to me. And then, from then what happened then? The next stage of creation, Yesham Imaha Prajaha Loke. Yesham, from all this initial creation, when the creation started, then followed Prajaha, all the living beings. Everything came into creation by the mind of Brahma. So everything moving and non-moving came about. Human beings, animals, plants, insects, everything came about from this projection. And thus, Loke, in this world, that is how the creation started. Now, therefore, this is how he's explaining to us that the external world also has been created by Lord. The internal world also has been created by Lord. So the external and internal both is a manifestation of the Lord. Now we come to verse number 7, which is the very crux of this chapter. Because two important words appear in this verse. One is called Vibhuti and one is called Yoga. If you look at verse 7, the very first line. And the very title of this chapter is called what? Vibhuti Yoga. So we must understand what is this Vibhuti. Now if you recall in chapter 9, the last verse 34, Krishna said, fix your mind on me. So that's why this chapter 10 now is going to address this issue. Fix your mind on what? Who is this me? And he is going to give us examples of his Vibhutis. Vibhutis means divine manifestation or glories of the Lord. So how, by fixing our mind on these divine manifestations which occur in the universe, in this creation, we can constantly fix our mind on God. If you remember in chapter 7, he gave us some examples. I am the fragrance of the earth. I am the, the heat in the sun. I am the rain. I mean the rain. Everywhere God is there. So here he's going to give us many, many more examples of his Vibhutis to us, for us to contemplate and understand how Lord manifests in this universe and to keep our mind constantly fixed on him. Because the word meditation does not only mean us sitting down, closing our eyes and thinking of God. What is meditation? What are you doing when you are meditating? You are focusing on a single thought. So the same thing, we are also meditating. If in everything in creation, we can fix our mind in God. I see the sun, I think of God. I see the moon, I think of God. I see the rainbow, I think of God. That is called continuous meditation. So this is the purpose of Vibhuti Yoga, or continuous meditation. Now, Lord has got another power. One is he manifests also as the creation. That is called Vibhuti. But the other word is also there, which he uses, Yogam. Yogam means his Maya Shakti, which is there in unmanifest form. So Lord has got two powers. One, he keeps everything in unmanifest form, which is called Yogam. And when he projects this manifestation, it is called Vibhuti. So both Yoga and Vibhuti, Lord is going to talk about. Unmanifest power is called Yoga. The manifest version of the same power is called Vibhuti. Everything that you experience in manifest form in this world existed before in unmanifest form. And if you go back to chapter 8, you refer to verse number 18, 19 and 20, he already spoke about this. That is on pages 157. You look at verse number 18, page 157, chapter 8, verse 18. So there he told us, at the coming of a day of Brahma, all manifest beings proceed from unmanifest. Everything is there in seed form, the whole creation is there, it proceeds into manifest form. The unmanifest is called Yogam, the manifest is called Vibhuti. And then what he says in verse 19, again this whole cycle keeps going on and on and on. Beings are born again and again and again. This whole cycle of creation and dissolution has been going on for billions of years. And where is Lord? Verse number 19, beyond this unmanifest, there is another unmanifest, which is who? The Lord himself. So you have the Lord, you have the unmanifest creation in matter, then you have the manifest creation. So all in all, there are three entities there. The Lord, the unmanifest in seed form, and the manifested creation. So the same thing now he is going to tell us about his vibhutis here in chapter 10 now. So he says now, vibhutim yogam cha mama. Krishna says, I have got two powers of creation. One is yoga, which is the potential of all creation in seed form, and the other is vibhuti, which is the manifest form of the universe. So both my manifestations are there. One exists in unmanifest and one is in manifest form. And he says, yaha veti. Suppose one comes to veti, who comes to know, anyone who comes to understand this, that Lord is both in unmanifest and manifest, he is both the cause and the effect of this creation. What is the advantage of this devotee? What is the greatest advantage if I come to recognize that God is the unmanifest and he is the manifest also, which I cannot see in creation and which I can see in creation, both is nothing but God. What is the greatest advantage for such a devotee? There is no right or wrong. What is the greatest advantage? No, that is the third stage. There is still a higher stage to realize the oneness with him. But if you can see God, if you can understand that God is in the unmanifest and manifest, what is the greatest advantage? You can accept good in the bad through, yes, what else?
Spiritually?
You don't have to search for God here and there, isn't it? You can worship God anywhere in creation. So now the concept is God is sitting in one place. He's either at the temple or he's either at the altar. But if I understand God is in this whole creation, he's manifesting in this whole creation, the greatest advantage is I can worship God anywhere, anytime, in anything in creation. So that is called what? Aneka Rupa Darshanam. Correct, exactly. Yeah. So your reverence for the creation becomes greater. You can rever everything in creation. That's why we then talk about ahimsa, non-violence, towards humans, towards animals, etc. Okay. So what else he says now? Saha avikampena yogena yujyate. Saha, such a devotee who recognizes the manifestation of God in this creation, who comes to realize both the powers of God, he goes on to the next level, which is what? That God does not manifest as the creation, but God transforms as the world. He appears as the world. So God does not transform into the world, he appears as the world. So once we reach this intermediate stage, then the third stage is very easy for us. That all his forms only appear, but God is making that appearance. Just like the cinema screen remains white, on the cinema screen is projected all the various drama, etc. going on. But the cinema screen itself remains changeless. So this is what the devotee will reach the next stage. Avikampena means it becomes a strong conviction. It's not just reading the Gita and saying, okay, God is everywhere, and going out there and then you start cursing everybody. It becomes a strong conviction that God is manifesting in this entire universe. So there was a story, in fact, in Ramakrishna's, Gospel of Sri Ramakrishna. To explain how such a person can just get lost or intoxicated with God consciousness. So once a great scholar, Pandit, came to visit Ramakrishna at his ashram. And at that time, Ramakrishna was suffering from the last stages of throat cancer. So he told Ramakrishna, I will give you a prayer, mantra. You recite this mantra and then you concentrate, bring your mind and concentrate it on your throat and your cancer will be removed. So it says, bring your mind away from everything, fix it on your throat, recite this mantra and you'll be cured of your cancer. And Ramakrishna got very upset. He scolded the Pandit. He said, you want me to tear my mind away from God and concentrate it on this rotten piece of flesh? So because he was already engrossed, he was already happy, he was already, immersed in the thoughts of God. For him to tear his thoughts of God, thoughts on God away and concentrate on his rotting piece of flesh, he told the Panditji, don't waste my time now. I've already reached that level of bliss. I don't want to come down. Now, this does not mean that the devotee gives up all forms of worship when we come to the third stage, because we can see from the lives of Shankara, from the lives of Ramakrishna, Paramahansa, they continue to worship the Lord in form, although they understood the all-pervading nature of God. So, here Krishna gives a promise that if we are able to reach this level where we can see God anywhere in creation, you will definitely come to the third level where you understand God is unmanifest beyond this creation. So here Krishna gives his promise. He says, Atra na samshaya. Atra, in this regard, na samshaya means there is no doubt. There is no doubt that you will easily progress to the third stage. So our effort now is what? Not to jump to the third stage, but first come to that second stage where we can realize the presence and worship God in everything in creation. That's why Aneka Rupa Bhakti is our next stage that we should progress. And how should we progress also? He will give us the very sadhana how to follow in the next verses which are coming. So now, from verse number 8, he will speak about how one should progress and come to this Aneka Rupa Bhakti, and then how we progress to Arupa Bhakti. And one of the biggest advantage, if we can come to this Aneka Rupa Bhakti, as I said, we can worship God in everything in creation. But another great advantage is, somebody just mentioned correctly, that all our raga dvesha is neutralized. There is no more likes and dislikes. Why do we have likes and dislikes? Because we categorize things into their compartments. I like this, I don't like this, I like this person, I don't like that person. Some people even have their favorite chair when they come for Gita class, they must sit there. Right? Somebody else sitting there, they get very upset. So raga dvesha, create a lot of raga dvesha. Right? I'm just joking. So, but once I have this vision, once I have this vision that God is manifesting in the whole creation, how can I dislike one part of creation and like one part of creation, isn't it? If I say Lord is in the tree, Lord is in the animal, Lord is in the insect, then how can I say I like this part of creation and I dislike when everything is nothing but Lord? So, the biggest advantage if we can attain this level of worship of Lord is the raga dvesha gets neutralized. It goes away. Because to such a devotee, everything in creation is divine. So here he says now, to help us understand further in verse number 8, Aham sarvasya prabhava. For this Aneka Rupa Bhakta, Lord becomes the very source. Prabhava means source. Source of what? Sarvasya, everything. Now, when we say everything, it does not only mean what is created in the universe. What else can we expand this to? When I say Lord is the source of everything in this universe, how else can I expand this understanding? Not just to see Lord in the dog, Lord in the cat, Lord in the tree, Lord in the flower. How else can I expand this? If I say Lord is the source of all creation, sarvasya prabhava, all creation, how can I extend and make this thing more meaningful to me? How can I expand this thought? Lord. That means every success, every failure, life, death, everything that happens in life, what is the very source of that? It is the Lord. Because He says sarvasya, everything. So the source of my success, the source of my failures, everything is from coming from the Lord. Prabhava, there is only one source. And He says sarvam mata pravartate. Pravartate means proceeds from mataha, from me. So this whole creation is kept in balance. The solar systems, the four seasons, everything. Lord keeps this whole creation moving in very perfect harmony. Right? The fruits come at the right season. The harvest comes at the right season. Everything happens in very perfect order. So He is the source of creation and He keeps the whole creation functioning in its right order. Meaning again what? Who is the creator of the Lord of Karma? The one that gives you your punyam and papam? It is the very Lord who maintains this. So even the law of karma is very properly maintained. Whatever we receive, whether good or bad also, is very perfectly ordained by the law. And He says, thus He says, iti matva mam bhajante. Such kind of devotees, when they understand that I am the very source and the very maintainer of this whole creation, they bhajante means they worship me, realizing that I am everything in creation. I am your success, I am your failure, I am in life, I am in death, I am in the law of karma, I am in everything. So the devotee is able to realize me everywhere. Bhajante mam, they worship me. And what kind of devotees are these? Buddha bhava samanvita. Buddha. Buddha means the wise people. They are truly called the wise people. They are the wise ones. They have knowledge about me as the creator and me as the one who manifests in this whole creation. And with this attitude, they worship me. Samanvita means they are endowed with this bhava, with this nature, that they realize the presence of God everywhere. And how do these devotees live their life? So now, the next few verses are a way for us to progress from aneka rupa bhakti to arupa bhakti. So verses 9, 10 and 11 are a very perfect progression of how we should lead our lives. This is the advice of Lord. From 8 to 11. So how are we to lead our lives? So here He says earlier that all the experiences in life that we go through, positive, negative, such a bhakta of God who understands that Lord is the source of everything, he will never reject any experience in life. He will accept every experience as having come from God. So these are the wise bhaktas because they understand that Lord is the source of everything. So everything in creation has come from the Lord, including our own experiences. Now, this is a very practical verse for us to follow, how we should lead our lives. It says, mat chitta madgata pranaha. Chitta here means mind. Minds are always, he's now talking about those devotees who are the aneka rupa bhaktas. How do they lead their lives? Chitta, their minds are always fixed on me. Mat chitta. Mat is God. Mat chitta means chitta is the mind. Their minds are always continuously fixed on me. They are constantly lost in this God consciousness. Constantly having thoughts about Lord. Divine thoughts in their mind. And what else? Not only is their mind engrossed with God, madgata pranaha. Pranaha means the senses, the eyes, the ears, the nose, the lips, the tongue, the skin. Their senses also are constantly reaching out. They want to experience this spirituality. They want to experience various spiritual experiences. So mind is hungry with thoughts of Lord. Senses also are yearning to see the Lord, hear bhajans, go for spiritual talks. There is a thirst in the devotees. They themselves are driven to all these spiritual places. They like to go to temples, they like to go to pilgrimage, they like to go for spiritual talks.
In fact, I was told surprisingly at one talk I was giving last week, two people actually fell asleep. So that somebody came and told me, he said, I think it's a heat, but I think they are not interested at all, isn't it? It's not a question of heat or whatever. When your interest is not there, you will naturally fall asleep. So where is the best place to have wonderful sleep? Come for satsang. Go for satsang. You'll have marvelous sleep. So here we are talking about those devotees whose minds are engrossed on God continuously. And then you look forward to all these spiritual activities. You like to go into seva, you like to go to all the right places, mix with like-minded people, you look forward to it. So their senses are always seeking spiritual experiences. And what else? Bodhayantaha parasparam. Even when they meet other people, what do they talk about? They don't waste their time talking about gossip, backbiting, all kinds of unnecessary news. They don't want to waste their time. Every moment of their life, they want to fill it with God consciousness. So, parasparam means when they meet each other, bodhayanta, bodhayanta means they enlighten one another. So what knowledge they have learned about God, they want to share with you. And they are also interested for you to share with them their spiritual stories, their spiritual experiences. They are not interested to hear anything else. They don't want to waste their time. What clothes was this fellow wearing? What handbag was this fellow carrying? What shoes was this fellow wearing? All kinds of gossip, they are not interested. We want to talk about something related to God. Such kind of devotees of God, bodhayanta paraspara. They enlighten one another, they share their knowledge. And what else? Kathayantas chamam nityam. Nityam, always. Kathayantas, they speak of the glories of the Lord. They speak about all the stories they've heard of the Lord. And they like to listen to all the stories. Katha means basically stories. So listening and sharing stories of the Lord, speaking about the glories of the Lord, chanting the glorious names of the Lord. All the time on their lips is the names of the Lord. And nityam, that means constantly. Again, as I say, it is not that we drop all our duties whole day and sit down and chant the names of the Lord. But at the back of the mind, in the subconscious mind, there is always these thoughts of the Lord is there. Whatever actions we do at the back of our mind, there is always this feeling that Lord is there with me. That is what he is talking about here. And what is their state? What state do they reach when they can do all this? When constantly they are engaged in God consciousness, he says, tusyanti cha ramanti cha. Two qualities are there. So life goes on with all the ups and downs. It doesn't mean that you become a bhakta of God, that all your problems in life are gone away. No, you still meet success and defeat, victory and sorrow, profit and loss, everything is there. But because your mind is immersed in this God consciousness, tushyanti means they derive so much of peace and satisfaction. That is tushyanti, contentment. They are constantly contented people. And ramanti, they rejoice. Every time they think of the Lord, they hear the name of the Lord, they are constantly rejoicing. And why is that? Because the most important thing, why are these devotees constantly contented and rejoicing? What is the main reason?
No other desires.
They have no desires. No other desires, correct? Where do they depend? Where is their dependence on for their happiness, security, and peace of mind? Not on the world, but on God. Therefore, once they have, they are not dependent on external changing circumstances for their happiness, they are only dependent on God. Such kind of people cannot be shaken. That's why they enjoy a peace of mind, calmness, happiness, despite whatever they face in life, because their thoughts are constantly engrossed in God. And peace of mind can be derived in two ways. There are two ways you can derive your peace of mind. One is you can satisfy all your worldly desires, you can also get peace of mind. What is the second way? You eliminate all your desires. Either you give in to all your desires, you can also get peace of mind, but you know it is temporary peace of mind. The other way is to slowly eliminate your desires. Why? Because once you have found the happiness in God consciousness, what will other desires mean to you? They mean nothing to you. Somebody tells you latest phone is out, so what? Latest handbag is there, so what? It doesn't matter to you anymore. Why? Because you already found that inner source of peace. In Bhajan Govindam, there's a beautiful line that Shankara gives. Yoga ratva bhoga ratva sanga ratva sanga vihina yasya ramat yasya brahmani ramate chitam nandati nandati nandateva. Yoga ratva, whether you are in the spiritual path, you are doing some spiritual activities. Bhoga ratva, sometimes you are out in the world meeting people, doing your worldly duties. Sanga ratva, sometimes you are in the company of people. Sanga vihina, sometimes you are alone by yourself, you don't have the company of people, you are just sitting alone. He says, whatever situation in life you are in, spiritual path, worldly path, in the company of people, without the company of people, what is most important? Yasya brahmani ramate chitam, the same word, ramate, the same word you see here, we use that word here. Rusyanti ramanti cha. Ramate means constantly thinking. Chittam is the mind. Yasya brahmani ramate chittam. Chittam, the mind, is ramani, constantly thinking of what? Lord. Once your mind is immersed in Lord, it doesn't matter wherever you are. And thus he says in the last line, nandati, nandati, nandat eva. Three times he repeats. You are verily at peace, peace at peace. Your mind is totally at peace. So the lowest level of satsang, they say there are two levels of satsang. The lowest level of satsang is to mix with like-minded people, right? I always choose the type of company who like spiritual activities. What is the highest level of satsang? Lowest level of satsang is, I want to mix with people who are always into spiritual activities. What is the highest level of satsang? Highest level of satsang is, you can be in the company of anybody, it doesn't matter. You are still at peace. Right? So first, initially when our mind is weak, like they say, when a plant is just starting to grow, the farmer will put a fence around the plant to protect it from animals, to protect it from things. But once the plant has grown into a tree, what do? You remove away the fence. So similarly, in the initial level of satsang, we should try as possible to mix with like-minded people. Once our mind is strong, then we can be in the company of anybody, our mind is not disturbed. That's why the most boring people in parties you go to are who, you know? People always stay away from them. Spiritual people. The most boring people in parties. Because they don't know what to talk. And everybody wants to avoid them. Because the minute you start talking to them, they start talking about God only. So, Bhajan Govindam, this is exactly what he says. The mind is always at peace. And now, verse number 10. He carries on now. So this is how basically we should lead our lives. Right? Whatever is explained to us in verse number 9, he now proceeds to verse number 10, how these devotees live their lives. Satata yuktanam. Yuktanam means they are devoted to me constantly. The bhaktas, through every relationship they cultivate with others, they never forget their relationship with God. You may have numerous number of friends, numerous number of relatives, neighbors, etc. But in and through every relationship that you cultivate, you never forget your one main relationship with God. So yukta means to constantly keep your mind united to God. Satatam, constantly. And why? Because they understand the difference between temporary and permanent relationship. all your other relationships are temporary. You have only one permanent relationship, and that is with God. And what else he says? Priti purvakam bhajatam. They worship me, bhajatam. These ever past devotees, they worship me priti purvakam, with love. So it is not a blind or what we call a mechanical love for Lord. It is a real, true, dedicated, committed love for God. And when we say priti purvakam, love means what type of love? Unconditional love. Unconditional love is priti purvakam, where God is the only destination in life. Now, so far he has spoken about how the devotees lead their life. That means the main focus is what? On devotion. First, start your sadhana with devotion. Have that love and devotion to God. Meet the like-minded people who are also spiritual inclined. Spend your time talking about God, listening about God. So as you keep on immersing your mind more and more with God, now Krishna is going to tell you what is he going to do for you now. In verse number 10. He says, what will Bhagwan do for such a devotee? What is the next stage after devotion? What is the next stage after devotion? Jnanam. So how will you come to Jnanam? If you have devotion for Lord, God says, I will bring you to Jnanam. I will bring Jnanam to you. You don't have to go for Jnanam. I will bring Jnanam to you. So here he talks about that. Because there is only one way to reach moksha, and that is through Jnanam. Jnana Yoga. So, this Jnana Yoga also, a lot of us feel that how are we going to start first? Because we are all family people, we are devoted to so many duties, responsibilities. So how are we going to devote ourselves to Lord? So in one of the writings of Adi Shankaracharya called Aparoksha Anubhati, it's a text by Shankara, and he writes in one line very beautifully how one, a householder, should lead his life to go on the spiritual path. Swavarna ashrama dharmena tapasa hari toshana. Now, what does it mean? We all feel that as householders, we all have disadvantage, isn't it? Because we say that Swami is this great fellow, they are staying in the ashram, all day we can read the Bhagavad Gita. We got so many duties, responsibilities. How are we going to reach that stage? But what do we forget? What do we forget? Huh? Here, Shankara is saying, Swavarna ashrama. You do your duties according to your ashrama. Two things are very important. Varna and ashrama. It says swa means our own. Each of us have got individual duties and responsibilities. You take your own individual duties and responsibilities according to two things. One is ashrama. Ashrama means first, which stage of life are you in? Are you at brahmachari, student life? Are you at grihas? Are you at vanaprash? Whichever stage of life you are in, do all your duties. That's very important. Because if you can't learn to do your duties, you are not going to progress on the spiritual path. And the second is varna. Varna means analyze your gunas. Understand your personality, your nature, and take up that work which suits your personality and nature. By taking up your work based on your personality or nature, you won't get agitated. And by doing your duties in different ashramas, if you are a student, what should be your responsibility? Concentrate on studies. If you are a householder, take care of your family, your household. So do your duties, don't give up your duties. And how should you do your duties is added in one more word there. All your duties must be done as tapas. So he says, Swavarna ashrama dharmena tapasa. Now what is tapas? How do I do my duties as tapas? How do I bring in tapas into my duty? You see, when we keep any form of self-denial, that means supposing you say, I like to drink 5-10 cups of coffee a day. then you tell yourself, okay, next week onwards, every Monday I won't take any coffee. Now, when you start on Monday and you don't take coffee, what's going to happen to you? You draw a symptom, isn't it? You get nervous, agitated, all the time thinking of coffee. Is it a comfortable or uncomfortable experience? Uncomfortable. So when you are doing your due, and whenever, if you, even if you feel uncomfortable, why do you do it? Because you want to discipline your mind and your senses. Why? Because it is an offering to God. You are doing it as a surrender to God. Just like fasting, we love to eat food more than 3 times a day, and the day we fast, you are going to think about food more than anything else, isn't it? So, yet you don't eat food and yet you feel uncomfortable. But through the uncomfort, you go through it. Why? Because it is a surrender to God. So, when you do your duty, you will meet all kinds of situations also. Take it as tapas. You will be uncomfortable by doing many duties. You will find many duties unpleasant. You will find many duties you don't like to do. But just like you keep tapas, same way you take your duty also as tapas. Even if you feel uncomfortable, you feel it challenging, doesn't matter. Take it as a form of tapas. And that's why in that line also he adds in, attitude must be Hari Toshanat. Hari Toshanat means what? Hari is God. Everything I do, Toshanat means, is for the satisfaction of God, is to make God happy. Everything I am doing, even though I am uncomfortable, even though I am facing the challenges, I am doing this to make God happy. So that should be the attitude, Hari Toshanat. So, with tapas, facing all the difficulties, doing it for the sake of making God happy, do your duties, follow your varna, ashrama, dharma. That is very important. So if we do all that, the most important thing is we get purification of mind. And when that happens, now Krishna says, what I am going to do for you now, once you have attained this purified mind. Tesham dadami buddhi yogam tam. Buddhi yoga, buddhi means intellect. So buddhi yoga means nothing else but jnana yoga. Here the word buddhi yoga means jnana yoga. And jnana yoga, it means what? Shravanam, mananam, nididhyasanam. Systematic study of the scriptures under the guidance of a competent master for a length of time. That is the definition of jnana yoga. I have given you all this before. Systematic study of the scriptures under the guidance of a competent master for a length of time. Right? So it's not just part-time study. Okay? So what does Krishna says? I will dadami, I will grant you this jnana yoga. I will give you this jnana yoga. That is Krishna's promise. What have you got to do? Be devoted to the Lord. Immerse yourself in activities of the Lord. Think of the Lord as much as you can. Purify your mind. Then Krishna says, I will give you. When he says I will give you means what? Not that overnight suddenly you have the whole Gita knowledge in your head. Then I will be in trouble, nobody will come to classes. What does he mean by I give you? I give you jnana yoga means what? Huh? I give you the right guru. I give you the right environment to study the knowledge. If you want books, I will give you the books also. I will provide everything for you. So therefore, as I said before, your coming to this class is not by accident. It is by the lifestyle that you have chosen, that you have led over this life and past lives, where you have purified yourself, where you are driven to this knowledge. And you will find that all obstacles, like we were discussing last chapter when they said ladies are disadvantaged when it comes to spirituality. But if you look around this class, there are more ladies than men attending the spiritual classes. So the barriers to spiritual growth are removed for you. They are taken away for you. You find that you can progress very fast on this knowledge, the Dhamma. And throughout the ages, we have got many, many saints who have come. Again, in the Gospel of Ramakrishna, you can read the names of so many wonderful people, ordinary people who were driven to come to Ramakrishna's ashram. From all the corners of India they came, and when they heard this man speak, they surrendered to him and they changed their whole life. So many, many such disciples are listed there in the Gospel of Ramakrishna. Of course, the most prominent one is Narendra Nath, who became later known as Vivekananda. Right? He was also from a family background, but when he came under the spell of Ramakrishna, he surrendered to him and changed his whole life. So yuga after yuga, great souls manifest. Who sends these great souls? Lord Himself, Adi Shankaracharya, Ramakrishna Paramahansa, Vivekananda, so many of them came to enlighten people. So opportunities are created, but not everybody goes. There are very few fortunate ones who are able to access this knowledge. And what happens when you get this knowledge? Krishna says in this verse number 10, the last line, Yena Mam Upayanti Te. When they finish the path of Jnana Yoga, when they complete the path of Jnana Yoga, when they understand Aham Brahma Asmi, Aham Atma Asmi, I and the Lord are one, what happens? Yena, by this path of Jnana Yoga, they, those who have gone through a systematic study of scriptures and grasped the absolute truth, what happens? Mam Upayanti, they will attain me, they will come to me. Which me is this again? Brahman, not Krishna me, Brahman. They will attain the highest, unmanifest, supreme reality. Upayanti, Mam Upayanti. So very important message he has given us, the sadhana, how to follow, what are we expected to do, and then God tells us what he will also do for us. But first we have to play with our part. How? By starting our sadhana with bhakti. Through bhakti, devoted, committed bhakti to Lord. And then the knowledge part will come to us very easily. So do all your duties and responsibilities, surrender yourself, do it for the happiness of Lord, and don't worry how you come to this path of knowledge, you will find the obstacles being removed. Now, verse number 11. Here, Krishna will conclude and then Arjuna will raise a question in the very next verse. So here Krishna says, how he will give you this knowledge? He says, I will light the lamp of wisdom. That's the word he's going to use. I will light the lamp of wisdom in the mind of the devotee. Now, what does he mean by lighting the lamp of devotion, lighting the lamp of knowledge? Remove the darkness, the ignorance, and there's only one way, by making this knowledge available to you. So lighting the lamp is very symbolic. What it means is removing the darkness from your mind, the ignorance from your mind. How? By providing this path of knowledge for you, the opportunity to acquire this knowledge. And we can also see a very beautiful example. When Arjuna surrendered to Krishna, Krishna was the Lord of the universe. If he wanted to, he could just tap Arjuna and give him the knowledge instantly, right? Yet why did he engage him in such a dialogue for 700 verses? And make us study 18 chapters, you say I have to come back and study. Why not he just tap him one shot and give him all the knowledge? Because the knowledge has got to be realized by us. Right? So Krishna could have done that. He could have just tapped Arjuna and said, all the knowledge is there now, you know what to do. But yet he engaged him in a series of question and answer. So it tells you that this knowledge also you have to put in your effort by questioning also. It is not easy to get this knowledge. Although the obstacles are removed, yet you have to also put in your efforts also. So through systematic teachings, like how Arjuna also learned the knowledge, we also have to go through it also. So he says now, Anukampartham. Anukampartham means, out of my compassion, Krishna is saying, when I see these pure devotees, that they are putting so much of effort, so much of devotion they have in me, out of that compassion, I will provide them all the necessary conditions to come from Aneka Rupa Bhakta to Arupa Bhakta. I will help them to get this knowledge. What is the knowledge? Atma Bhava Staha. Where is this existence of this God or this consciousness? He says it exists, the Atma, the Self, exists where? In the seekers itself. It is not something outwards we have to see. That same consciousness, the Satchit Ananda which we have to experience, is not an external search, it is an experience within us. So that Atma Bhava, the very nature, exists within us. The reality exists. So he says, I will reveal, he will reveal. That's why it is said, a master can only give you the knowledge, but he cannot help you to experience that Satchit Ananda. That is by Lord's grace, by Lord's compassion, that you will get this experience. So he says, I will reveal that inner nature to them, that they can experience this height of happiness, peace and security. And how he says, Bhashvata Jnana Dipena, the flame of knowledge. Dipena means lamp or the flame. Flame of what? Jnana Dipena. The flame of knowledge I will ignite in them. Bhashvata means it's not just a flicker, it is a what we call a strong lamp of wisdom. It will shine very strongly in you. So it is not just a flickering lamp, it is a bright shining lamp. Very bright flame. So it's not a flickering flame. That means what? Initially when you start this knowledge, you will find that a lot of things you don't understand, a lot of things are very confusing. You read here, read there, sometimes you get confused, but don't worry. What he's trying to tell you, you put in the effort, little by little that flame will become a blazing fire. So you don't worry, you start first. Because he is there to help you, so you don't have to worry. And that's why they say initially when the flame is there, you just protect it. As you protect that little flame, slowly it becomes a burning fire, bonfire. And that's why Shankara also, in one of his writings, he describes very beautifully by comparing the allegory of a lamp, oil lamp, with knowledge. So he says the oil stands for something, the wick stands for something, and the glass lamp that covers also stands for something. Do you want to guess what it stands for? It's a very allegorical description of our spiritual path. You have the oil, you have the wick, and you have the glass lamp. So each of them stand for something.
The body.
The body. Which one? The glass. The wick is the mind.
The wick is the self, yes.
The oil?
The wick is the self.
Wick is the self, okay. Oil is the?
Knowledge.
Lamp is the?
Clarity.
The what?
Clarity. In my
sense. Okay, now I tell you what Shankara said. He says, oil in the lamp is the bhakti, the devotion you must have. That is devotion. The wick is the mind which is steeped in devotion. It must be what you call immersed in that oil of devotion. So first of all, take your mind and immerse it in the oil of devotion, like the wick is immersed in the oil. And then he says, the glass lamp is the knowledge that protects us, protects our mind. So first of all, soak your mind in devotion. And then the glass lamp is the knowledge which will help to protect your mind. And thus, little by little, now when the glass lamp protects the flame, what happens? The flame gets brighter and brighter and brighter. It does not flicker. It's very steady. So how will your mind get steady first? Soak it in devotion and then protect it with knowledge. The flame remains very steady and bright. So thus, knowledge becomes a conviction. And what does the power of knowledge do? Here he explains, Tamaha Nashamya Ajnanam. Tamaha is darkness, you can understand. Darkness means ignorance of the mind. Nashaha means remove or destroy. Knowledge is so powerful that it nashaha, it destroys the very ignorance in our mind. And ignorance is Ajnanam. Jnanam is knowledge, Ajnanam is ignorance. So there is, means what is the message of this verse? There is no other way to remove your darkness, your ignorance, but by knowledge. So you put in your effort with bhakti, ultimately knowledge will help you to remove that ignorance. And that's why Krishna engaged in such a dialogue, long dialogue with Arjuna, until at the end he asks him, have your doubts been dispelled? And Arjuna says, my doubts have now been dispelled. I will do as you have instructed me. So such a long dialogue he goes through to remove that darkness. So now Arjuna has heard all this talk, and now he also wants to ask a question now. He has heard about Ishvara Swarupam, what is the nature of Ishvara. He has heard various manifestations of the Lord in chapter 7, chapter 9. And now he wants to ask how to worship this Ishvara. He wants some examples, more and more examples he wants, by which he can keep his mind fixed on God. So, first of all, he wants to now make a request. Before you make a request, what should you do? Before you ask, what should you do? Before you surrender, what should you do? How to? You know, you're asking Krishna for something. Before you ask Krishna for something, what should you do? Butter, apply some butters. So first of all, you must praise the master, isn't it? You don't simply go there and tell, hey, tell me this, tell me that. First gently, you must praise him, you know. So first of all, he's now going to praise him first, use some nice words to praise him, and then he's going to request a favor. So Arjuna's question is going to be based on what Krishna himself has said. Krishna has said, I am the very cause of the universe, and I am also appearing in this universe. And every glory in the universe is nothing but God's glory. So, if we are intelligent, we are beautiful, we are handsome, we are smart, we are powerful, we are clever, all these glories are whose glories?
God's glories.
So we should always remain humble. Whenever people praise us, remember, all my glories are nothing but actually false glories. So this is what Krishna has said, that I am appearing in this universe, every glory is my glory, and I manifest through every God glory, that is Vibhuti Yoga. So now Arjuna wants to know what are his glories in this universe. And before that, he offers some prayers and salutations to Bhagavan. So he says, Bhagavan Param Brahma, Bhagavan, you yourself, Bhagavan means, the word Bhagavan appears in the second line, the last word you see Bhagavan. Bhagavan means you yourself, Krishna, who are standing before me, you are no other than Param Brahma. He recognizes him, he salutes him now. He says, you are that Param Brahma, that supreme Nirguna Brahma, who is now appearing to me as the Saguna Ishvara. But I understand that you are the Nirguna Brahma. So he's slowly beginning to understand that this Krishna standing in front of him is not an ordinary super being, but is beyond that already. So first of all, he addresses him as Param Brahma. What else? Param Dhamma. Param Dhamma. Dhamma is in this first line. You are the supreme refuge. You are the supreme abode of this whole, of the whole creation. That's the last switch, I think. That one, just switch it off. The third knob on the right. Third knob, I just put it to zero. Okay. So you are, now all these things that Arjuna is addressing Krishna, many of these things, same words, Krishna has talked about before. So and Arjuna also must have heard before all these descriptions of the Lord. So you are Param Dhamma. And what else? You are Paramam Pavitram. You are the ultimate sanctifier, the ultimate purifier. Because why? Anything that comes into association with God immediately gets purified. We take a fruit, we put it at the altar of God, immediately it becomes prasadam. If our mind is soaked in God, it becomes purified. We take a dip in the Ganges, we become So, by association with the Lord, everything becomes purified. Just like when we install a deity and we invoke prayers, then that place where the deity is involved, that place itself becomes purified, just like a temple or an altar also. And a saint also, why do we call a saint holy? Saint is a human being. But how does he become a saint? When he discovers the Lord within himself. So he becomes purified also. That's why we call him a saint. Because he himself has realized God. So everything becomes purified by association with the Lord. Then he addresses Lord as Purusha. Purusha means he is the very indweller also. Not only are you all pervading, but you also within me also. In every human body, Lord resides there. He is called as the Purusham. The Purusham is the witness consciousness in each of us. The Chaitanyam, Sakshi. So the word Purusha comes from two words. Puru means body. Sha means residing. So Purusha means the one who resides in the body. And earlier in chapter 5, verse 13, he told us, he is the Purusha residing in the city of nine gates. The city of nine gates is basically the body. The two eyes, two ears, etc. The nine gates of the body. And what else? You are Shashvatam. Shashvatam means you are the eternal one. You are the infinite. You are beyond time and space. So Shashvatam is eternal, changeless. Because earlier we said Purusha means he resides in the body. That's why immediately follow with the word Shashvatam. Because why? When the body perishes, the Lord still exists. So although he resides in the body, but yet he is Shashvatam. He does not perish when the body perishes. So now up to here, Arjuna will go on praising Krishna, and then he will make a request for Krishna to give him his list of various glories or duties. Okay? So the time is up here. I can't go into the next verse. Any questions now? This time we have about 5 minutes. Yes. That's what he said. Once you are immersed in God, then he will take you to the next level of jnanam, knowledge. So being, having our mind immersed in God is only devotion. That is karma and upasana. But then he says, I will take you to the next level, that is jnanam, knowledge. Because you still have to come to the arupa bhakta. Okay, no further questions that we have here. Vasudeva sutam devam kansa chanura mardanam devaki paramanandam krishnam vande jagat guru. Thank you.